Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I am Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And this is the Clone Wars Report. Wow, that was great. That was like a news report that was leading into like an electronica jam.
Yeah, it was like a rave that can't happen right now during the lockdown.
I do absolutely want to see a social distancing rave with everyone like at least 10 feet apart on X's of tape and dancing by themselves.
It seems like a Fred Armisen sketch waiting to happen.
I'm sure he's working on it right now. I accidentally stole from Fred Armisen as we speak. But we're not here to talk about Fred Armisen. This is not the Armisen Report. This is the Clone Wars Report. And we're going to be discussing the 8th episode of Season 7, titled Together Again. Ken, how did the title Together Again grab you?
We've been really having fun with these Clone Wars titles. And hey, that's a Star Wars quote, you know? Together again, wouldn't miss it. You know, yeah. This is great. I love it. Good move.
Yeah, you feel like that's the way you took it immediately as a Luke Skywalker Han Solo conversation quote.
I was expecting both of them to show up. Yes. Yeah, but fun and for this smaller scale, I know we talked about Duel of the Fates as a possible title for Episode 9, and that was okay till I thought about it more. This. On an episode-by-episode basis, a lot of fun to have these kind of fun titles.
Yeah. I saw some discussion in the Star Wars-o-sphere about what together again meant. Who do you feel like it was referring to?
I, at the start of the episode, was like, oh, Maul's back for sure, right? So together again, Ahsoka and Maul. Obviously, I think some of the connections changed. You know, the different layers to that title kind of unravel and unfold as the episode goes on. But I started out thinking Maul's back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when I first saw the title, that's what I thought, too. Did you have a different opinion by the end of the episode?
I think by the end, it was one of those like, there's seven examples of together again, you know, including Star Wars fans and a certain wonderful alien species we all love coming up. You know, yeah, it was all together again.
Yes. Okay. So you took it together again as a thematic statement, but also at least partially about Ben Quadraneros' species.
Absolutely.
Reunited with the Toons, which we will definitely talk about. Yeah, I liked it because when I first saw it, I really did think it was like, oh, this is more of the Maul Mandalorians Bo-Katan story is going to come in. And it certainly did. But I thought it was a little bit more thematic about what the big idea is. And when I rewatched the episode, the Martez sisters with Ahsoka in the ship, in the Silver Angel, working together to escape. That's where I really felt the resonance of it, that of all the various together agains, that's the one where it feels like this little mini family is rebonded by the end as they're escaping in the Silver Angel.
Totally agree. Rebonded, reforged by fire and stronger for it. And it jumped off the screen for me in that moment, too.
Yeah, well, that is a great transition, if I do say so myself, into talking about our overall reactions. What was your overall reaction to this episode?
I think this was the best of the arc for, you know, many reasons, and a lot of it's just it's in that that cleanup spot. So it's gonna have everything that's been building. So that's natural that I think this would be the best of the arc. But it just was really rewarding, which to me shows that the arc was well done, well paced. And I know I've heard, you know, you and I dip our toes in that Star Wars sphere every once in a while, and you kind of see some complaints, not a lot, but just like, some of these are slower episodes. And I just think it all ends up being this perfect little four story arc that's going to really rank high among all the Clone Wars stories. And I just think this episode drove all that home.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed exactly what you're saying, that this is the final episode of this arc, so certain things do absolutely have to come home. I thought it really completed the arc of the Martez sisters really well, and I feel like looking at this arc, Ahsoka certainly goes through a lot, certainly learns a lot about herself and deals with a lot thematically, but it is ultimately a little bit to me more like that the Martez sisters are the main characters of this arc. I do still wrestle a little bit with plotting stuff, that I love all the thematic stuff. I love all of the ideas. I wonder if they could have been paced out a little bit differently. And a couple moments, I think I'm falling into the trap of what I sometimes preach against, of building up expectations and then reacting to those expectations, where I think there were some moments where I felt like some of these big thematic revelations would be more tied to a beat of action. And some of the thematic things were resolved in a more conversational way and weren't as big of an action. And I think the biggest thing I'm responding to is the final revelation of when Ahsoka is discovered to be a Jedi, or reveals that she is a Jedi to the Martez sisters. And I think there was something about the way this episode really set up in the previously on, that Ahsoka has this choice of whether or not to reveal she's a Jedi. So I think I had a little bump in this episode that Ahsoka certainly makes a lot of choices. We'll talk about them. But that the actual moment that this arc has been leading to, of the Martez sisters finding out Ahsoka is a Jedi and kept it from them, wasn't an active choice from Ahsoka, that it was spilled by Loose Lips Mark Grimm. I think I had to I reacted to that the first time, and that I watched it, and then I tried to practice what I preach and let it go and enjoy all of the thematic stuff rather than become, you know, overly negative about it should have been this way, it should have been that way.
I can't wait to discuss that scene in detail as we do often in the second half, because I think you and I think that stood out to me as well. And I didn't have as strong as reaction as you did, but it was very similar. It was very similar. And the second viewing kind of drove something home for me that's working for me in that moment. But I definitely agree with you, because we had talked about it. We had talked about something that's kind of what we wanted for Ahsoka. And hey, every once in a while, it's good for us to practice what we preach on our own stickers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's what I'm trying to do. And what I'm excited to talk with you about and get your feedback and approach it absolutely as this is the story that was presented. So if Ahsoka didn't wasn't the one to actively say, okay, I choose, I'm telling you I'm a Jedi, then what does that tell us about the themes? What does that tell us about the characters and stories, and really try to embrace it from the creator made that choice for a reason. So I'm excited to dive in and do that. Let's talk about the big themes. For me, we've had a lot of fun. All of these Clone Wars episodes is kind of digging into the under the surface to, and sometimes looking directly at the surface when things are clearly stated. But what is the big sort of traditional Lucas and Star Wars theme present? And for me, this one felt like it was really about this idea of facing your destiny. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense for you? Or are you like, what the hell are you talking about, Joseph?
No, that makes sense. I love that you use that word, because it's such a Star Wars word. I mean, it's obviously a word that goes everywhere, but for Star Wars, it's pretty powerful. We love the destiny. And I wonder sometimes, what am I trying to say? This all worked for me on internal wiring, internal programming, who you are. And that might be destiny in another way. You know, not some big magical, this is what the gods have made you or put you the path that God's put you on, but this is what it's who you are, and you have to return to that or be that or try to live up to that or try to succeed with that in spite of yourself sometimes, in spite of what maybe you want to be, like say a Han Solo. So yeah, that did work for me from a different point of view, or a slightly same point of view.
Yeah, no, I really like the way you phrase that, and I like that idea that if there is something just kind of true about yourself, and maybe you try to walk away from it, and something that you encounter outside in the world makes it feel like you have to acknowledge that part of yourself, you can't walk away from yourself. It could be happenstance, but it also feels like this invisible hand of destiny, right? If you're like, I'm really good at math, but I don't want to be an accountant, and everywhere you turn, there's a math problem, it can feel like my destiny is haunting me.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. And we always talk about destiny is about bringing you to choices, and you have to make those choices. And those choices are going to be fueled by who you really are, which might be part of your destiny. It's a big circle.
Yeah, it's a big circle, big circle. Every Star Wars episode, circles are completing themselves, so to speak. So the specific ideas that and actions that made me come to that is the idea that Ahsoka can't seem to escape being a Jedi on a thematic level. That just to try to get through her day-to-day life from where we catch up with her in this arc of just like, I bought a bike, I'm gonna go somewhere and do something. And she's just immediately faced with all of these choices that are, she can't help but see them in this sort of a Jedi way. And this episode really was dealing with the idea that the choices that a Jedi would face, Ahsoka can't get away from looking at the world through that lens.
Right. Yeah. Despite running away. Well, I actually, that's not right. I don't think she ran away for all. She chose a different path, right? Yeah, incorrect.
Right. Right.
Term for me. Yeah. 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 So I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like she chose to be like, I want to pursue a different life in the galaxy. Is like, no, it's just life. And here it is. You can't get away from wrestling with what it means to be a Jedi. And then there's the much more literal sort of concrete. Is it destiny or is it the state of the galaxy that Ahsoka can't escape her concrete personal history of being a Jedi? Like this episode is really like literally Bo-Katan, a Mandalorian that you have, you know, encountered, is watching and following you. You thought you were trying to help some sisters out of a, you know, bad spice deal with some gangsters, but there's, you know, one of your personal antagonists, Maul, literally sensing you. And just like the sense of not only is Ahsoka not going to be able to to get away from thematic ideas of what it means to be a Jedi, how much of that is responsibility and how much of that is sacrifice and all that kind of stuff. Like, she literally can't get away from the actual humans in the galaxy she knows.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a real world example, which I love to do, but yeah. This is who you are. And this is who I think you kind of want to be. And I don't want to get too much into the moment, but I one of the things I really loved is Bo-Katan kind of saying, hi, yeah, it's me. Here's what you need to do. You have 5 minutes to choose, because I ain't going to make you. You already know what you need to do, or you're going to run away from that, and just walks away. I just love that.
Yeah, you just, like, you related to the power of her just going like, I'm not going to debate this with you. You know, we've got a common enemy. I'm asking for your help. Choose.
Yeah, I just well played, you know, well played. It wasn't it's keeping with what we know of the Bo-Katan character, and maybe even Mandalorians as a whole. But yeah, I and so to me, that hearing you describe and explain a lot of these big themes around Ahsoka and who she is as Jedi, it all kind of boils down to that moment. It's like Bo-Katan saying, you either know who you are or you don't. Go for it.
Yeah. <I'll be> Yeah. And I think without, you know, being overly heavy-handed with it in referencing specific other Star Wars stories in this specific episode, Ahsoka wrestling with these kind of things reminds me of why Luke needed to face Vader and why Rey needed to face Palpatine, that it's this combination of they represent the moral questions that you have about yourself, about who you want to be, about how you want to handle your own fear and anxiety, but they're also literally physically the person with whom you have conflict, and you're not going to be able to escape either of those things. You're not going to be able to escape the meaning of them, and you're not going to be able to escape the actual physical confrontation with them.
Right. You must not the fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I thought the facing your destiny theme was supported also by Trace and Rafa. I don't think, again, that this was made overly explicit, but it's a great tie-in to last week's episode. To me, it felt like they couldn't, Rafa in particular, couldn't outrun the morality that was instilled in the Martez sisters by their mother. Like, that was told to us so clearly in the previous episode that, you know, before we had to fend for ourselves, and Rafa had to be this, like, make these kind of choices of survival is our goal, and anything we do is justified by the fact that we have no choice, we just have to survive. But knowing before Rafa had that mindset that she was raised by a mother who is basically like, when you see somebody in need, you help them.
I'm so with you on that point. I'd even made a note about this was her version of being a Jedi. It's what was already in her, similar to Anakin and Shmi and what Shmi taught him, right? That's the powerful parental, and in some cases, very specifically, the mother connection, and the upload of who you are comes from that. And I thought it was really powerful because, again, we're not going to fault Rafa and Trace too much for what they've done, but they've learned some of the lessons over the last, especially last week, and some of their choices, what they lead to. And for Rafa to have to realize, this is right. It's who I am deep down. Loved it.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that moment. But, you know, I think the fact that Rafa chooses to help Ahsoka, and it doesn't feel like the Rafa we met in the beginning of the arc would do that. And I also like the specificity that Rafa's plan was, I'm going to steal spice that the Pikes already own and bring it to them, which seemed like a little bit of acknowledgement of Ahsoka's, you know, had been moralizing of, if you do anything with this spice, the Pikes are going to turn it into drugs, and you are responsible for the pain that causes. So the fact that Rafa seems to be like, well, yeah, I mean, we're not going to spread any more spice around that isn't already in the hands of the Pikes. We're going to steal some from the Pikes to give it back to the Pikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. My last thought on the whole facing your destiny theme is that I like that even the Pikes in the Mandalorians on a much less like fate and destiny, but like on a practical level, they cannot free themselves from Maul, that they are stuck with dealing with the problem that is Maul, including Marg Krim's great line and great delivery. He knows. He always knows.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't want to, you know, just make it sound at all like I am defending this wing of a criminal organization, you know, but it was very similar to what, to me, what Trace and specifically Rafa have gone through. Like, you make this choice to go into this life. This is what it leads. And then sometimes you're trapped and you can't get out. And so I had a little bit, it's played so well in that moment, but I had a little bit of sympathy, of just like, even if I wanted to, he would come kill me. Like, loved it. So yeah, you're trapped by your choices sometimes.
Yes, and your impression is drawing out the vocal similarities between Mark Grimm and Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
Smithers, Mull will kill me. That's great. Yeah, and I like that idea that a little bit of there's always a bigger fish, a bigger evil fish, where they make it really clear that, hey, if I don't get Mark Grimm, I'm the big scary gangster, but if I don't get the spice back, I'm gonna die too. Any other thoughts on that big theme of facing your destiny from a sort of a big picture level?
I just love how it takes that big picture and breaks it down to these little tiny choices and the building blocks of your life. Again, I really go back to this idea of destiny is this fantasy sci-fi trope. It's the stories, it's the Campbell journey, the hero's journey, all the stuff we love, and it's all there. But I love that this arc has taken a lot of that, what we think of the Jedi, what we think of destiny, what we think of our choices, just broken it down to these real basic earthbound kind of ways. Your upbringing, the choices you make, trapped by them, going back, not being afraid of who you are or facing who you are. It's all kind of in all four of these episodes, it just plays out. And I really like that.
You're right. That's a really good point that I wrestle and think a lot about the difference between sort of the mythic fantasy side of Star Wars versus in the prequel era and onward, kind of getting down into more of the gritty reality of, you know, how does the government actually function? How does trade work? There's Hollow shows, all that kind of stuff. In this episode, this arc is a really great combination of it's dealing with these big mythic ideas of destiny and choice, but it's really a story told about the absolute just machinations of the drug trade. And we got Ahsoka blowing up a spice refinery. Like, you're getting into like, this is Miami Vice in space.
Bum, 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 bing, bum, bum. Yeah,
a comparison I did not expect to make. Moving along then, the other thing that was, I think, a theme of this whole arc that I really wanted to get your thoughts on is if this arc has been a sort of trial of the Jedi from the perspective of some quote-unquote common people like the Martez sisters, and from the perspective of Ahsoka, who has made the choice to walk away. Wanted to dig into how this episode comes up with any verdict on the trial of the Jedi. So Ahsoka really does not think of herself as a Jedi, I think, right? She right. thinks that this is, I made the choice to walk away. I'm a Jedi is somebody who is a member of this order, and there are ranks, and I threw my badge down on the desk and I walked away. But there's this big moment at the end of the episode where Rafa tells Ahsoka, you don't think of yourself as a Jedi, but you act like one. And if you pause there, that sounds like it's going to be an insult. But then Rafa continues, or how I would want them to be. So how did you unpack that scene of Rafa saying to Ahsoka, you are a Jedi? And maybe implying that goes with some of the lofty moralizing, but also you are the Jedi the way I would want them to be. How did that land with you? What did it mean?
It works really well from, and go with me here on this angle of, you know, when Ahsoka leaves in such a powerful moment, and that great moment with Anakin, and she walks away, there's a lot of uncertainty, right? She is not wagging fingers. And we as an audience are like, well, you know, these all-star cast of Jedi are kind of being mean to her, and she's going to go discover herself, and we can pontificate about all these great things Ahsoka means. There is a great piece from Riley Silverman on Screen Junkies right now about Ahsoka kind of being the best Jedi. It's a little essay, video essay. Check it out. And we can all have those Ahsoka's the best of us right now conversations, right? But I love that Ahsoka does not feel that way. Ahsoka's not going, you know, I'm the one who's getting it right. She's learning this, and to see it now reflected back on her, it's this mirror being held up to her by someone on the ground level, 1313, the darkest of the dark, the underworld, and then tie it into the personal story with the Martez sisters and Rafa being understandably harsh and hard about the about it, but to have her see it and be like, yeah, you know, like, I don't like that word, Jedi. I don't like what I've experienced at the hands of it, but I'm not throwing that concept out, and you shouldn't either because you're that concept. And Ahsoka's not like, you know, you're right. That's what I was telling everybody. It's just her going, okay, yeah, I get it. This is who I am, and this is who I need to be, and helping people isn't just, might have started from maybe guilt, like, oh boy, I got to help these girls because Luminara did some bad things. And now it's just, all right, this is the path forward. And I'm not still, now Bo-Katan's here, and I still don't know if I want to do it. In fact, I'm going to leave my motorcycle because hopefully we can all hang out again. but you know what I mean? Like, I love how it plays out. We get to kind of watch it and watch Ahsoka become this. Not that I would expect her to be like, I've got it right. You know, maybe Caddy Mundy would do that. But so I loved how that plays out. So the trial of the Jedi, the verdict of the Jedi, I don't know the decision's been rendered, but Ahsoka is making her case for this being the way. And you just don't think about it. You just be it. You just do it. It's reflected to her.
Yeah. No, I think there are a lot of great points there. I think in particular with Ahsoka's arc of, you know, being framed and hunted and having the politics of the Jedi be sort of superseded by the Republic itself, it would be easy for us as the audience to look at that and assume that, but that Ahsoka has this essay-like idea, you know, the Ahsoka's theses about why the Jedi are failing, that and that it's, you know, the lessons of the prequels in the prequel era about, you know, being rigid and being too close to the government and it being too macro focused and not thinking about the little people, and we should have never become generals and all that. It would be easy for us to take all of those ideas and apply them to Ahsoka. But I think you're totally right that Ahsoka is probably in that moment just feeling that her trust and her faith is shattered in the Jedi, and probably doesn't even totally understand why, and is more having this moment of like, I questioned individual moments in being a Padawan and being a Jedi and growing up and trying to find my way, but this is the first time that I just, my faith in them is shattered, and therefore my faith in my place is shattered. So if you look at her arc, is like really, you know, like we said in the beginning of this arc, of descending into the unknown, into level 1313. For herself, really descending into the unknown. And I think there's a power in this arc of her discovering what she might think is a Jedi based on just observing herself, observing how she chooses to react. It's certainly clear in this arc and just blatantly stated by lots of characters about the importance of when you see somebody is in trouble, you simply help them. And that in some ways that's the most Jedi thing, and almost an argument that that's what the Jedi should be closer to, of not seeking out problems, not being overly proactive, but rather just if you see someone in need, you help them. And I think it's interesting that Ahsoka just kind of discovers that the combination of like, well, just help others, and the importance of taking action when you see a need for it. And I'm always fascinated with that, with the Jedi, of how much of their moral quandary is when to act versus when not to act. And you can look at the prequels and go, they really should have, Qui-Gon should have rescued Shmi. He should not have been inactive then. And then you can look at the Clone Wars and go like, well, they never should have gotten involved in the war. And it's one of the fascinating things I love about them is it is when you have great power like the Jedi, it's so hard to choose when to use it. In this arc, is Ahsoka just kind of going through and making these in the moment gut choices based on exactly what's in front of her at the moment of when to act and how.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just, it's all tying again, and there's some stuff coming at the end. I'd love to talk about it of Ahsoka going forward and how I think some of it's links up and is even linking up more in my mind as we discuss it. So
cool. Cool. Well, a couple specific verdict questions for you. So Ahsoka has in this arc been just helping those in need right in front of her. Do you think that that is making her feel better about being a Jedi?
I think, yeah, and being labeled as one, right? Clearly, for many reasons, again, not to remix it all, but again, you know, she doesn't want that label, and I understand that. Sometimes you want to claim labels because it means something to the world to see, oh, that person calls themselves that, but they're acting this way, and I enjoy that. Other times, you know, that's going to be a conversation ender. She walks into every room and goes, I'm a Jedi. So I like that. Like that she sees this path again, this path forward, and how she can live in this kind of new Ahsoka, new normal for her.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I liked the idea that maybe Ahsoka would feel better about what it could mean to be a Jedi in that she isn't going out and she's not being sent on a mission by the Jedi Council like the Pikes accuse her of. Everything that's coming to her is just coming to her. Like, her bike broke down and she was trying to help out and she got caught up in all of this. She didn't decide, like, you know what? It's time for me to suit up and take care of Maul once and for all, you know? Yeah. And even then with the Mandalorians, I think it's so, like you were saying with Bo-Katan saying, you got 5 minutes, choose. Here's the deal. I wonder if Ahsoka might feel better about her relationship with the idea of being a Jedi, her relationship with the Force, that does it feel like destiny that these problems are coming to her? She is not going to them.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that point of view. It's on your doorstep, whether you want to or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you think the Martez sisters feel about the Jedi by now? If you kind of take the look of this arc certainly is about Ahsoka. It certainly does move Ahsoka forward, but kind of structurally in the actions, it is in some ways the Martez sisters' story. How do you think they feel about the Jedi now? How do you think they're changed?
It's fascinating because I wonder, especially with Rafa, if they'd be positively conflicted. Yes, a long time building up kind of a scab to the world of some things that have been done wrong to you that were in fact, you know, wrong, more than just a certain point of view, just real bad stuff happening to you, and a lot of it at the hands of the Jedi, you're going to have a certain view. And I still think it might be tough for them to easily give that up. They're not going to return back to 1313 and be like, hey, everybody, guess what? Turns out Jedis are great. It's going to be still a hard conversation to have, but I love that they have this beacon of hope, this beacon of, I don't know, enlightenment for what it could be, and that they have a standard, a correct standard to hold up to any future interactions and what they think of Jedi, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So it isn't just, I love that they chose to phrase it that way, that like, yo, you're acting like the Jedi should be. Well, yeah, you know, at least what I'd like them to be, because I know a lot of them still might not. That's important for Ahsoka's story. It just fascinates me in terms of Rafa and Trace's story. You know, I would love, you know, not in Clone Wars. I don't want an animated series. Or, I don't know, a short story, something, comic series. Give me a continuation of Trace and Rafa. They're very interesting to me. Very interesting what they mean to the Star Wars world, the way they just kind of, we see a lot of the things we've just taken for granted over years and years and years of being Star Wars fans. It looks at a lot of them in a new light, but it's not all negative, and it ends positive, potentially positive, if that makes any sense. I'm glad that there just wasn't a definite answer for Rafa, you know?
I really liked it. It was subtle but powerful to me that in this episode we got a slightly different view of Trace and Rafa's view of the Jedi. A couple particular beats when Ahsoka says, I left the Jedi Order, and they both say in unison, you can do that. And then in that final conversation, when Trace says, why would anyone stop being a Jedi? You start combining those things. If they had this horrific experience with a Jedi where on one hand, a Jedi's choice killed their parents, and then instead of helping them, the Jedi were just like, the Force will take care of you, bye. So they're kind of mad at the Jedi for acting. They're kind of mad for the Jedi at the Jedi for not taking any more responsibility and acting to help them when they clearly needed help after their parents were dead. But they still have like a reverence for the Jedi, like as people of power. And why would you ever give up that power? And it started to make me feel like there are other bits of this a little bit in Star Wars, but this was really almost explicitly like that they almost feel about the Jedi the way we in the real world sometimes feel about celebrities. Like on one hand, they're like, oh, you rich people with your perfect lives far away, don't care about us. Oh, you know, you're quarantined on a yacht, you asshole. Right. But there's still that little bit of respect and reverence for that power in Trace saying like, well, yeah, if I had that power, why would I ever give it up? Mm-hmm. Somebody can do that. Why would you do that? It felt to me like somebody who on one hand could be mad at a celebrity for a lot of legitimate reasons.
Right.
But then on the other hand, go like, why would you ever give up being a rich celebrity?
And how that turns into, I guess, a sign of respect, but just Trace like, like, wow. Yeah. What does that mean about you? What does that say about you? To walk away from this power and in a positive sense. I like that. I love that moment too.
Yeah. And I think thinking through it that way made me lead toward thinking about how the Martez sisters feel about the Jedi now. I think Rafa's comment to Ahsoka is very clear of at least how I would want them to be in that. Hey, Ahsoka, you saw that we were in need of help and you chose to help us on like Luminara. You didn't just tell us like, well, you know, I can escape with the Force and, you know, the Force will take care of you too. Bye. You know, like I think that part is really clear. But I think that there's also this nuance of maybe some of their anger at the Jedi is a great respect for that power and them wishing that the Jedi would use that power in different ways and that there's kind of a responsibility to power.
Yeah, there was something I liked about that moment towards the very end where Roth is kind of like, even after all this, is like, all right, I guess you're going to arrest me now, right? And that and it's just kind of state of matter of factly, a little bit of attitude, but like, just like, all right, I guess this is the way of it. And it's just one more way for Ahsoka to just be like, no, this is not how it goes, or at least not how it should go. And it's definitely not how it's going to go right now. Set up a lot of revelations.
Yeah, that you're right. That is a great moment. That was really like the Jedi can make mistakes, but if we make them, Jedi arrest us. So I guess you're going to do that, huh? So we always talk about the moral of the episode. That's literally on the screen at the beginning of the episode. This week's was, you can change who you are, but you cannot run from yourself. What did you make of that?
It's about who you really are, I guess, because you could also look at this like there's some, you know, like tonight I'm probably going to order some pizza, wings and French fries, and that's my nature. And I try to run away from that. Right. So that can be daunting and overwhelming and somewhat negative, and you must choose to be better. But maybe the real choice is deep down of someone who wants to eat a little better and get a little healthy for those in my life and for myself. And that was and that's the real deep down me, if that makes any sense. So in this particular episode, it's very positive. It's about the stuff we talked about, Rafa and Trace and their mother. It's Ahsoka. But maybe even then, as I think about it and using my silly example of, you know, Ahsoka's like who I really am, I guess I'm a Jedi, which means I should go back. I should be a general. I should fight. I should do all these things. But it's like, no. I'm going to go below that to the next level, to the real level, to the core. And I'm going to go connect with that because that's who I am. And that's what you can't run away from. And that's what defines you.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think this one did resonated with me across a lot of these ideas, but super specifically with Ahsoka of you can remove the title of Jedi. You can choose not to be a Jedi, but you cannot run from yourself, meaning a lot of the choices and the actions that you're going to take are the actions of ideally what a Jedi is.
To make it even more my silly example, I have started having cauliflower crust pizza because I still like pizza. but I've got to be a better pizza eater. And that's Ahsoka with the Jedi Order.
I understand. For years and years, my frozen pizza of choice was Tombstone. And I realized that is deeply, deeply unhealthy. So I've been eating more California Pizza Kitchen. So I can change the kind of frozen pizza I eat, but I cannot change the truth that I eat frozen pizza.
There it is.
There it is. Star Wars summed up with frozen pizza. We always talk about the action as well, because action is usually a big part of the Clone Wars. It's been a little dialed down in this arc, but there was some big action this episode. Did you have a favorite action moment?
There was a lot in this episode, a lot of run around chasing, space flying, a lot of dog fighting that I liked. But I really wanted to focus on the moment between Rafa and the manager, as he's named, the trench coat. Their fight and then going up and the way she disposes of him was very James Bond like to me. I don't know. It's like the beginning of Casino Royale or something like that. I loved it. I love the way it was directed in animation, and I love the designs and I love everything about it, including when he falls, like the manager lifts up off the platform, like the little detail of that. It's kind of a gruesome, I'm assuming, death. He falls into nothingness. I just liked it. I liked it. Good fight.
Seems like it was a big fall. Big fall. I think it's safe to say that the manager is being permanently furloughed, so to speak. For me, I did like the ship flying at the end. That was fun. We'll talk about that. But I think the return of the Toons and the fact that they are all face made me really, really feel Trace hitting them in the face with a pipe, because when you hit a Toon in the face, you're hitting them almost everywhere because they are all face.
That's all face.
It's all face. So you don't want to be a Toon and have a punchable face, because that means almost your entire body is just begging for a punch. That's no good. That's no good. And on that note, we are going to take a quick break. We looked at sort of the big picture ideas, and now we're going to go through and talk about it scene by scene and look at some of the fun details when we return here on Clone Wars Report.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And we are back together again to talk about the Clone Wars episode together again. So, Ken, you and I are going to walk through this pretty much in order. Some of these scenes kind of overlap one another, so we're going to kind of take them scene by scene. But we'll start right there at the beginning. Ahsoka and the Martez sisters bicker a little bit, work through some of their ideas and perspectives in their cell, reunited together again in the cell. Ahsoka seems to really make this conscious choice of, I can't be like Luminara. I need to do something to help the Martez sisters. So she pretends to betray them, but actually buys their freedom. So when you were watching this, did you interpret that as a noble sacrifice on Ahsoka's part? Or did you feel like she was trying still on some level to escape the situation without the Martez sisters ever learning that she is or was a Jedi?
Ooh, you're being hard on Ahsoka, and I like that. I like that. I think it was not just that it's a little bit of both, but just like, I think it was the first. I think it's completely noble. I think she's like, here's what I can do. And as a bonus, I don't have to confront that part of me. And I don't have to have their opinion of me changed. And I don't mean that from just a surface level ego thing. She wants to be liked or at parties. Just she knows that that's going to complicate things even more. So I think she's making the right decision, and it's a noble decision, but tinged with a little bit of, and I get to have my Ronto cake too.
Yeah. I had written down that question when I was going through the episode in my mind. And then when I rewatched it, I felt like, yes, I am perhaps being too harsh on Ahsoka. But I thought what was interesting about it is there's such an idea of trust. And clearly that was what was broken for Ahsoka when she left the Jedi. And I wonder if it was almost on a more tactical level of, yeah, Ahsoka gets to avoid dealing with telling them that she's a Jedi, but she really is asking for their trust, needs them to trust her that she is trying to sacrifice herself to get them out of it. And if she said, hey, here's the deal, I used to be a Jedi, but now will you trust me, that she's pretty sure the answer would be nope.
Right. Yeah, it would be.
It would be. So I do like that that is a big part of what she what her big Jedi action is sacrifice. And not like Ahsoka expects, like, yep, I'm going to die, but that, like, yeah, I will handle this. And then it does have the added added benefit of they don't need to see her use the Force to get out of the cell immediately, as she does. Yeah. Did you have any other thoughts on this kind of introduction, the beginning part of the episode with their conversation in the cell and Ahsoka making her kind of complicated deal with Marg Krim?
No big thoughts other than I kind of like the little detail of Rafa kind of picks up on something right away, and Trace is just, you know, when the deal's being talked or Ahsoka's like, hey, I got an idea. You know, there's that little bit of edge and years and experience and street smarts that Rafa has over Trace that I just liked. It's a little detail when you kind of go back and watch.
Yeah. That's happening there in that conversation where, yeah, Ahsoka is saying, trust me, you know, I they're not my friends, and which actually means the opposite. And Rafa picks up when she's laying down. It's so sweet. And then we go to the Martez sisters refueling. And Trace is confused why Ahsoka would offer their parents as leverage when Ahsoka knows she doesn't they don't have parents. And Rafa, as you were just saying, is realizing that Ahsoka was trying to save them, and then Rafa wants to go back for Ahsoka. What did you feel about that? What did you think Rafa's motivations were here?
I think she was both moved, and that led to her being compelled to repay the debt and help and honor maybe a little bit of trust given. I think I look at Rafa as someone who's experienced compassion, help, and even like loyalty from an outsider for the first time in her life, if that makes sense. You know, she's got it from her mother and father. She's got it from Trace. And maybe she had a friend or two along the way she's loyal to. But she is, we are rats in a cage down here. And it's all about us, Trace. We got to protect ourselves. And she's not wrong. None of those feelings are wrong. And so I think to experience any kind of compassion from someone, and I love, you know, her and Ahsoka aren't on the same page. And she's been mistrusting Ahsoka from the beginning. And even jealous of, now you and Ahsoka and Trace are are you two sisters? You know, that type of attitude. And I think I just like that it starts to dawn on her. It's just, she's experienced. It's like, what's this weird tingling sensation? Oh, I've been helped. Someone's compassionate to my place in this world and wants to help me. And they're loyal to me. And they maybe they don't, I don't deserve the loyalty. So now that means to act.
Yeah, no, I think that's it's totally what's going on. I really like that Rafa says about Ahsoka that what she did is rare, because it makes you feel like, well, they grew up with this, you know, great mom telling them, you know, help people and other people will help you. And then Rafa grows up rough and sees zero evidence of this. So what is it like then to suddenly see evidence of somebody actually doing that? It's interesting then that she would call it rare. But then Rafa does frame it as, she explicitly tells Trace, well, Ahsoka basically sacrificed herself for us. So if we don't go back for her, she's going to hold it over me. And Trace says, you want to one-up her on rescuing people? How did you interpret that?
I think that means Rafa still gets to be who she is. You know what I mean? She's got a wonderful, wonderful level of attitude and well earned for the life she's had. And for her to kind of be like, yeah. It's Han and Lando to me. It's that kind of a sisterhood in play here. Just kind of, I actually like that. And it's these big lessons and Star Wars is this, but it's also that her personality would be like, yeah, we got to go help her. And I'll be up on her on one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of really tracing Rafa's arc as an examination of the scoundrel in Star Wars. A lot of it tied to Han specifically, because Han is, you know, the original uber scoundrel of Star Wars. But the way you were saying that, I didn't even connect it when I watched, but the way you're talking about it, Han literally does that to Luke in the original trilogy. He keeps track of how many times that Luke owes him.
Yeah,
for saving him. So that's in some ways a direct bit of Star Wars scoundrel poetry there. But it also, to me, it was great because it did read as the true legitimate reason I'm doing this is I am moved that she actually did something selfless for us. And maybe my mom was not full of crap and I'm going to reciprocate, but needs that scoundrel Han Solo bluster to go. But that's not why I'm doing it, though. I'm doing it, you know, so I can show her that I'm better than her.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Some lovely scoundrel bluster. So moving along, we'll get back to the Martez sisters. But we go back to Ahsoka escapes from the cell, and she has some great sneaking around. Man, in a video game. She's got the perfect sneaking posture, and she gets some thermal detonators and plans to blow up the spice refinery. When you were watching that, did that strike you as Ahsoka's being a Jedi?
Well, now with your example, it strikes me as anytime I'm playing like a Call of Duty game where I'm just, if I hide behind this trash can, the level will end. Let me put a bomb somewhere. You know what it struck me as? And you mentioned Qui-Gon earlier, and I'm like, perhaps this is what they should always do. Perhaps Qui-Gon should have saved Annie and then also put a bomb in Watto's shop, not killed him, but just helped free Shmi, you know, like this a figurative bomb. and you keep talking about this wonderful idea of like, hey man, maybe Jedi are just supposed to kind of go around and help where they see the need to help. And there's some red tape and paperwork assigned, attached to the Jedi Order over, you know, ending slavery on Tatooine and some issues there, which I get in terms of this bigger Star Wars conversation. But I love that, hey, you know, Ahsoka isn't, isn't bogged down by any of that. She's bogged down by none of it. She knows what is the right thing to do in the moment. And taking out the spice trade here, at least locally, is something she should do.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no conversation about, you know, does this fit within our mandate? What is our official mission? She's just alone. And it kind of just went past me on the first viewing because it seemed like a logical thing for a character to say. But then looking at it as a Jedi thing, I like that Ahsoka literally says, since I'm here, might as well do some good.
Yeah.
And it's this great thing of like, well, she's been moralizing, as Rafa accuses her of, like, to have any involvement in the spice is going to eventually cause people pain. And she's like, well, I'm right here. I might as well stop some pain if I can, is really interesting because in terms of all those Jedi choices, I didn't even think of relating it to Qui-Gon either. I mean, that's like him being like, well, I'm here, so I might as well free Anakin because the whole Chosen One thing, but might as well free Shmi. And since I'm here, might as well kill Jabba.
Yeah.
Might as well just take him out.
And if you want to have those real Star Wars deep down, gritty, lower level conversations, I understand why he doesn't do a lot of that in that moment. But it's the question a lot of us have. It's the Padme book is deals with that as well. So, yeah, I'm looking at this and going, yeah, Qui-Gon would look at Ahsoka and be like, that's probably what I should have done.
Yeah, and I like the freedom of it. Not like Anakin wouldn't have done something like that, because Anakin is always stretching his Jedi mandate, and Obi-Wan too, but it really resonated with me of well, I'm here, might as well destroy these drugs. And I did really like her sneaking posture, some of my favorite visuals of the episode. I got a whole stand-up bit about this James Bond video game that gives you the hint no one can hear you when you crouch, which is just such a video game truism that I love, yeah. And I felt it watching Ahsoka.
This also directly talk about emotional canon. What Ahsoka does here directly attaches itself to Obi-Wan and Elon Sleazebag Gano.
It does. It is a part of the large story about the danger of drugs. It is the just say no of Star Wars happening in these scenes. So then we get as Ahsoka is doing some good, blowing up some spice refinery machinery. Maul is revealed. We see the hologram meeting with the Pikes, and we get a big, interesting canon drop that Maul says, if you can't handle this, Crimson Dawn would be happy to take over. What was your reaction to seeing Maul and the Crimson Dawn canon drop?
All right, well, I'll go right to where my gut reaction was. I felt oddly justified for loving Solo. Oh, yeah, it's all connected. It's all there. It's all part of this big tapestry that keeps on unfurling in front of a Star Wars fans. And it's a little thing whatever. But I'm not. But it brought me some joy. It brought me that kind of joy. It drives home the fact that this is a last stand and a path for Maul and all those kind of bigger things. I'd love to talk about, but like just on the surface, when I heard that, I just kind of had that smile of, yeah, you're right. You're right. Crimson Dawn's a thing.
Yeah, it is. It is the beautiful part of canon. We had on the main show, I had a larger discussion about canon because there's that article going around. But to me, this was one of the great fun canon moments of, hey, I love the story of Solo. Crimson Dawn is a juicy, interesting idea that actually does have some rhythms with what's going on in these episodes of, you know, and Enfys Nest is talking about the pain that Crimson Dawn causes throughout the galaxy. And, you know, Kira feels so trapped by it. And you can connect Kira directly to Marg Krim of like, well, what can we do? He knows. He always knows. There's no point in trying to do anything different. So it for me, it's one of those beautiful canon moments where it has the power of, cool, I'm super invested in Solo. So it's cool to hear that that bit of story connected, but it also has like weight and meaning.
I
think the other part of it that is intriguing to me, and I'm really excited to see how much more they're going to play with it, is Maul's history right around this part of the story is kind of complicated. There's that Son of Dathomir 4-issue comic that if people are really interested in Maul politics, I think that's a great thing I'm gonna to look at before this next Clone Wars arc. I'm going to reread it because it is a lot it follows up on Sidious shutting Maul down.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is you know, Sidious goes and shuts Savage Opress down permanently and shuts Maul down, captures him. Then the Son of Dathomir comic happens, which has some stuff to do with Dathomir and Mother Talzin, and I won't spoil it if people want to read it. But the idea is Sidious is coming to be like, hey, I control the galaxy, and you're building this big shadow collective to control the galaxy, which makes me interested to, is Maul building Crimson Dawn in a different way to appease Sidious? Is he building it in a way to be under the radar, or is he building it in a way to just be like, you know, is this why they say in Solo that Crimson Dawn operates with the Empire's kind of permission?
Ooh, I love the politics of it all, if you will.
I love it.
I think I want to reread that Son of Dathomir comic too, from the old, that's one of the last things in the Dark Horse era of comics. You and I are, I think, going to the same spot here, where none of this was like, I'd say, like new revelations for me or anything, because there's a lot of this stuff already out here and you kind of got to put it all together, and it all's leading to this Siege of Mandalore, which is going to launch Maul into the next chapter of his painful existence. This particular moment, so outside of the, hey, that's the thing from Solo, and I love Solo, outside of that, it really just put this fine point on it. Like I said, this last stand and path from all, meaning this is still, like, Revenge of the Sith hasn't happened. This is still the era of the Jedi. The Clone Wars are raging, and Palpatine's out there. Maul's not too recently been removed from just kind of being out and about in the galaxy, right? He's coming back. And so Maul can't, I'm fascinated that Maul can't go down any of those paths anymore. He can't seek revenge as openly as before. He can't operate as openly before. But again, leading to some of your questions that you have and the Maulitics, as we were saying now. And he has to roam this underworld. And I'm fascinated by how he's doing that, to what you're saying. You got to believe Palpatine senses him, right? You know, Palpatine's not sitting there like, I gotta send him away. He's running a gift shop somewhere, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that Son of Dathomir really is all about how Sidious uses Maul for what he wants. And again, you know, I'm going to not discuss it for people who want to read it. But maybe by next week, Ken, if both you and I have reread Son of Dathomir, we can be prepared to kind of lace that into some of our conversations about the arc going forward, because I think it'll be interesting to see how much various ties of canon that Filoni wants to make, from Solo, this major motion picture, to Son of Dathomir, which is a comic book adaptation of a Clone Wars arc that did not get made, that has some big canon things in it.
I think that's a great homework assignment, and I accept.
Excellent. So then we get back to the story of the Martez sisters. They're going to get some spice from the Pikes, and it is an epic scene of BSing and beating their way to what they want. Rafa takes out that Trandoshan you talked about, the manager, and Trace beats Tungs with a pipe.
Yeah.
So a couple things I want to talk about here. First, let's just talk about the Tungs. So these are, of course, the species of Ben Quadraneros, one of the most controversial, when first released, new aliens in the Phantom Menace, in the whole Podrace scene. Looked it up on Wikipedia. They've popped up in modern canon. They have popped up in the background of Clone Wars on various posters and images. But this was their big scene-stealing return to being active characters.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about them?
What's his name? Josh Brenner voices the lead Tung. Excuse me. I love seeing that the Tungs are a naturally befuddled species. They're just naturally like, Quadraneros. He's just befuddled. He's a good, cheery chap, and he's befuddled. And these Tungs may be doing some nefarious things, but just kind of a befuddled alien species. And I like that consistency.
Yeah. If you watch this and you imagine that Ben Quadraneros is the absolute star of that species, he's the absolute best of them.
He's the best of the Tungs.
That's pretty powerful.
Hunger Games.
He is tribute. Yeah. I think for me, it was really cool to see because of my own sort of personal and I guess generational Ben Quadraneros, that when Phantom Menace came out and, you know, a lot of us who grew up with the original trilogy were more interested in Star Wars from the like Darth Maul. He's so cool. A double bladed lightsaber. Let's see some Jedi. All the cool, awesome mythic stuff. And then the alien designs were different. There was a lot more cartoonish stuff. And he was by far the most cartoonish. He's just a giant face. And, you know, I remember a lot of people going like, that's not Star Wars. I've come to love him. He's such a weirdo. Just what a great design to just be all face and legs and absolutely nothing else. Arms. It's been one of the proud traditions of the Clone Wars animated series that the Clone Wars has really fulfilled the promise of going deep and doing like a lot of the cool badass stuff, but they've never ever backed away from the aesthetic of the prequel era films. Yeah. And I really like seeing that, like, yep, in this episode that is dealing with big themes and morals of what it means to be a Jedi, like, yeah, also these weirdos are back with their big giant faces and their dopey voice, because that's part of Star Wars too.
Yeah. We know Filoni's such a fan of this stuff, as Favreau confirmed at Celebration almost a year ago to the day, right? I love it, if this makes sense, they're just kind of normalizing some of the weirder things of the prequels, because I'm like you too. Man, I came out of Phantom Menace, even when I was kind of like, oh, I think I like it in my first couple of viewings, I was like, but that stupid cartoon character, I didn't get it. And now, I don't know, I like it in the way I like McClunky, just like, yeah, why not? Why should McClunky not be there now? Why should Ben Quadraneros not be one of the best pod racers around? And it's just the Clone Wars, it's winking and nodding to the fans a little bit, but none of the characters are winking and nodding to the Toons. It's just that's who they are, and they're in this galaxy, and I love that.
Yeah, yeah, they got a job to do, and it puts them in the path of a pipe to the face. What did you think of Rafa's role in this? This kind of felt like the completion of Rafa's part of the arc, that she wants to be, she prides herself on being a scoundrel in the vein of Han and Lando, from our perspective, the audience perspective. Did this feel like that coming to fruition, of she successfully BS'd and fought her way into exactly what she wanted in this big underworld way?
Yeah, a great way to look at it. I love it, because we get some of that closure with Trace here in a bit. But like, yeah, and to do it for good, right? So there's your connection to Solo a bit, or to Han himself specifically. And she's got skills. This is why, again, I'm not like Disney Plus, give this to me now. But I would love to hear and see more of these sisters, because I just think they're intriguing and they're fun. They're really fun to watch, fun to listen to. And this was just a great moment of her really rolling up her sleeves and getting involved, like you said, in this world she wanted to be. It's not a great world, but I think she did it for good, and to learn to take those skills and do it for good is important.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that totally ties to the general arc of scoundrels in Star Wars. So we get on to Ahsoka and the Martez sisters being reunited. The Martez sisters successfully get the spice and take it back. But Ahsoka has been captured after planting all of her bombs. And Marg Krim, as we talked about, releases the Jedi reveal. Mm-hmm. So you said you had some thoughts on how this scene played out, that it wasn't Ahsoka having to make a bold choice of revealing that she's a Jedi, that she had already revealed herself to the Pikes through her actions, and then it's the Pikes who spill the Jedi beans to the Martez sisters.
Yeah, that's kind of along the vein, and I'm not saying any of this is right, because, yeah, we discussed it last week. It's like, wow, would it be great for just this reveal to have to do with Ahsoka pulling the figurative cloak back herself. This is who I am and everything. But then you kind of touched on it there. It's like, I think I watched the second time. I was like, you know, but she already made that choice, she by her actions. And then going to what you said earlier of you know, is this plan? Was this to skirt the issue of being a Jedi? Perhaps it was one final time. And maybe this is one of those lessons for Ahsoka to be like, I cannot hide who I am. I literally cannot hide who I am. It's in every fiber of my being. It's every action. It's every choice I make. And it's not about the Jedi Order or what to call me. It's just, this is who I am. It's what defines me. It is what I can move away from, but I'm always going to have to return to because I want to return to. This is me. And I just took it from that point of view the second time around. Again, not saying any of that is right. Maybe it's me providing some comfort for myself for an expectation gone awry. But I really, in the end, was satisfied with that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's good. I think the thing that makes me enjoy it more is what you were saying, that Ahsoka has made the choice to reveal herself through her actions, right? Because she probably could have just escaped from the cage and snuck her way out. But she takes the time to try to make a difference as a Jedi and ends up getting caught. So in a way, it is her actions that ultimately revealed her. And I do want to be aware of not pre-writing the episodes in my head, because I do think there maybe could have been a bigger moment when it really is Rafa's going to die if Ahsoka does not clearly fully reveal herself by using her power. And we had moments that danced toward that last episode with lots of great secret Ahsoka Jedi moments. And I wondered if it would get to that point of, I can save you, but you will see this. If it was going to be that kind of an active choice. But I like it that it is still an active choice that Ahsoka makes a little earlier in the episode. Mm-hmm. And I think what another thing that we get out of that is a little bit more round robin of reactions from everyone in the room to this idea that Ahsoka is going like, well, yeah, I'm not a Jedi. I was a Jedi. And having both Trace and Rafa go like, you can do that. What's that about? And having even Marg Krim be like, what are you talking about? You were clearly sent by the Jedi Council. I assume these other people are Jedi. Oh, no, I guess you lied to him. Cool. So this scene, we do get to hear from everybody going, what are you talking about? Retiring from the Jedi is not a thing. What are you on about?
I know how it goes. This is a mission.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the big Jedi reveal?
No, a lot of it we talked about as it relates to Trace and Ralph and everything. But I think it's this continuing wonderful development of Ahsoka as a character.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we get to the Silver Angel escape. Ahsoka does use her Jedi power to escape, I should say, because, I mean, those bombs go off and that's what allows her to escape. She does some force pushing and they get on the Silver Angel. Yay, Trace gets her ship back. And there's some fancy flying and some fancy shooting, but Trace really gets to win the day by doing some of the great piloting that she claims she is capable of. So is that what you were talking about earlier, where you feel like Trace got some validation?
Yeah, I wrote down great win for Trace. She gets to experience that. She gets to show that she has those skills. She also gets to show that, hey, you know, the first time out, maybe you fell off the bike, but now you got it. You got it. And you got this. I love you're a Jedi. You're probably a good shot. Sequence. There's just a lot about it. And having recently ridden the Millennium Falcon ride at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, where you just kind of like, everyone's got a job in that cockpit. It reminded me of that.
Yeah. I really liked it as Trace, validation for Trace, because it does feel like that makes her personal arc complete as well as with mm-hmm. Rafa's. And I love that line of, well, you're probably a good shot then. Because it makes perfect just surface level sense, but it also goes to some of these bigger ideas we've been talking about of, well, you can really twist yourself in knots about, you know, who are the Jedi? Am I a Jedi? What does it mean to be a Jedi? And for Trace in that moment is just like, well, you have skills, right? Could you use them, please? And it's almost nice for Ahsoka to be like, yeah, I can do that.
Yep.
I can shoot things real good. That's one of the things it means to be a Jedi. Real good at shooting things.
Good shooting skills.
Yeah, and there's that nice triumphant music cue of very classic Star Wars New Hope. Exciting flying music and dogfighting music was very, very cool to see. Moving on toward the end of the episode, they return to Coruscant followed by Bo-Katan and the Mandalorians. Get that cool shot of the Mandalorians in their ship with the classic Mandalorian turn as they're following someone. And they show up and they ask for Ahsoka's help. And Ahsoka says explicitly that she is afraid where this path might lead, that it might lead back to the Jedi. And the Martez sisters seem to encourage her to go on the Mandalorian journey. So what did you think of that final scene?
As discussed, one of my favorite things was just Bo-Katan. Just kind of like, just no guff, man. We don't got time for this. Either you're with us or you're not. And I think you're gonna. And by the way, you know, she takes her helmet off. I don't know if Dave Filoni's ever seen The Mandalorian. I don't know about you. Can't do that, Dave. Come on, get with it. So I loved everything about it, and I love what it means for Ahsoka. And I have some questions more than even answers about Ahsoka and how this will start to line up and the emotional canon starts to connect with some of the material we already have, like the Ahsoka novel. Comes to mind and later on down in Rebels. And I think it all not starts here. Clearly Ahsoka's journeys started long before this, but it's an exciting turn to the next chapter for Ahsoka for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with everything you're saying. I also like that Bo-Katan, you know, explicitly says that the Death Watch is no more, which is partially just like, hey, of course, that's a good straightforward thing to tell Ahsoka. Like, that's not what this is about. This is about Mandalore, and Ahsoka had traced Maul's call, so she knows that Maul is on Mandalore, and Bo-Katan is not BSing her. But there was some rhythm to maybe why Ahsoka would feel like here is Bo-Katan, who thought she really, really believed in something, believed in an organization, and she's not with that organization anymore. And that made me interested of, is there going to be a little bit of Ahsoka Bo-Katan sort of bonding over what that means?
I love that. I love the starting point of it's like Bo-Katan's very much realizes, and perhaps that's why she didn't rush out to see her when she first saw her on the street. You know, like Bo-Katan smart enough to be like, yeah, I know we've got some stuff that maybe you don't know what's changed in me. And that's an interesting starting point for me. It's not, they're not fighting against each other. It's not that, but it's just like, you know, friend of our, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, blah, blah, blah. But like it means more than that. It's deeper. And I like the way, I just like the way it played.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you have any predictions or hopes for where Ahsoka's relationship with the idea of a Jedi is going in this final arc?
I guess it's more of hopes of this idea of can she learn to apply the sort of individuality she's earned and the steps she's taken and how it will line up to be a newer version of herself? And there's some literal questions I have that I you know, need to reread the Ahsoka book a little bit, but just how does this transition her into the Ahsoka from Ahsoka on the run who found her way into to being part of the beginning of the rebellion, being out on those planets in the Ahsoka novel and getting involved on a smaller scale when she needed to run. This is now it's post Order 66. Now it's a different ball game, right? And how she kind of reclaims a lot of herself there and then becomes Fulcrum. It becomes involved. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of that kind of begins here because now she's been on the run. She's learned a lot. All right, this is what a Jedi should be. But now it looks like she's going to have to get involved in something way bigger than just strolling around on her motorcycle. And now it is going back to the bigger question of, all right, should Jedi be generals? Should they get involved? To what level do you have to get involved? And now she's going to face that. And it's all kind of being dumped into this new version of her, I think, that's going to emerge. And I just want to see how the dots connect.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very interested in that too, of like, I found a little bit of the family with the Martez sisters, maybe managed to find a little bit of a philosophy that I can live with of if a problem comes before me, I will not turn away. I will help. But I don't know if I want to go back to the Jedi. I don't know if I want to go back to the war and that level of big picture responsibility. And I'm really, really interested to see how this final arc wrestles with that. And yeah, I want to reread the beginning of that Ahsoka novel as well in this week ahead of time to see how it's going to line up or how it's going to be played with, what her attitude is, but really see what the very end of the Clone Wars animated series, you know, forget what's in the Ahsoka novel, but just the very end of the Clone Wars animated series, what is Ahsoka's final thought going to be on the nature of the Jedi from her perspective at the end of the show?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So we are going to wrap up here. Any other characters, moments, or planets that you wanted to discuss?
Well, what I wanted to discuss actually is outside the show. We've talked about how great they've been, but the performers, Elizabeth Rodriguez, who voiced Rafa, and Brigitte Kelly-Canales, who voiced Trace. All through this arc, not only we talked a lot about it, just the animation, now they're able to play more with the facial expressions and how stuff reads a lot better on the characters. And a lot of it with Rafa in particular, that little moment of her just kind of like looking over Ahsoka like, I think I know what you're doing. I just thought those two performers did a really great job, and kudos to them.
I think that's great. And I think this arc has been really interesting in that it is clearly one that got fleshed out a lot from the little inklings of what this arc had been. And I think in a way it's a picture of what Filoni is interested in talking about right now, and spending so much quality time with the Martez sisters, and those great performances, I think, are a part of that. Two other little things that I enjoyed. There was just the practical thing of Bo-Katan kind of tracking Ahsoka throughout. But I really like the shot of Bo-Katan just watching the spice refinery blow up a little bit and just thinking like, yeah, there's a Jedi there.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Love that moment.
That was and then I really like this Marg Krim line when he is being convinced that the Martez sisters are not Jedi and did not even know Ahsoka was a Jedi, where he says, "How unfortunate that your stupidity is so authentic." That is from the Comedy Central Pike Roast, I think.
It's up there with anything Werner Herzog has said in Star Wars.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty high, pretty high. I could almost match the client. If you could have a action figure of any character from this episode, who do you want?
I wonder if we're going to go on the same here. I want the Tomb Worker Pack.
Would it come with a pipe to hit them?
Yes. Oh, you must have that. No pipe.
That's pretty good. I really liked the hooded Mando look. The actual hood was cool. I like that it's got a little blue outline. So I would take a hooded Bo-Katan action figure.
Definitely. How do we have Bo-Katan action figures? Has anything been?
I do not know off the top of my head. I will have to Google the second we hang up.
I'm going to Google why we're talking, because I need one. I do really love the character Bo-Katan. I also need a steam figure. Oh, man, come on.
There's a lot of Clone Wars action figures that need to get out there if they do not already exist. While you're Googling, let me ask you about one other Mandalorian thing we didn't talk about. So Ursa Wren, obviously, has been present in these episodes. Are you expecting more quality time with Ursa Wren, maybe building Ahsoka having a little bit of a relationship with her that will connect some threads from Rebels?
I really hope so. And by the way, I still think our wild prediction of, yours, because mine was really wrong, of the third one being the armorer is still possible, because I want there to be a deleted scene of they're flying away and the armorer turns to Bo-Katan and is like, why'd you take your helmet off? I don't think that seems wrong. No, I really do, because I don't want it just to be a little fun Easter egg. You know what I mean? Like, I want it to, not that I'm expecting some super revelations about Sabine or anything, just I want it to have some weight to it. It would be
great. Yeah. But little moments can, as we have demonstrated on this this very long episode of Clone Wars Report, little moments can lead to lots of ideas of canon and lots of implications of connection. I'm really curious to see. We've been joking around about it and having fun, but there's clearly different factions of Mandalorian culture that approach what it means to be a Mandalorian differently, and whether or not you take your helmet off. And this is it. This seems, you know, like such an obvious place to address it, when we've got confirmation from this episode with Crimson Dawn that Filoni is, you know, making some efforts to tie some ideas together. I'm so curious to see if that idea of those different views on Mandalorian culture are going to be explicitly addressed.
Yeah, I would love it. I mean, I tease about that situation, but you know, I do trust Filoni in that regard, that he understands it. He's very aware of those kind of little canon revelations.
So do you got a Bo-Katan Google report?
Only custom figures is what I'm finding.
All right. Custom figures. That will change when Bo-Katan appears live action in The Mandalorian, right? is our feverish hope.
Yeah.
As always, we're going to close this episode of the Clone Wars Report with the moral of what this episode of the podcast should be. Ken, what is the moral of this episode of Clone Wars Report?
I think that the moral here is we have done very, very good, the best as we can be recording in a different way. But eventually, we're going to have to find our way back to be in person while we record.
That is right. We will see what one another is wearing again sometime in the future. And that's a beautiful thing. But for now, we are going to hang up on our internet phone call, and we will be back next week for another exciting episode of the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.